begin. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the ABN AMRO Full Year 2015 Results Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. I would now like to hand the call over to Mr. Gerrit Salem, Chairman of ABN AMRO. Go ahead, please, sir.
Okay. Good afternoon. We are here with Wietse Rehorn, Kees van Dijkhuizen, of course, Dies Donker, our Head of Investor Relations, and Erik Bosmans, Head of Treasury. We will share our views on our results, and then we, of course, are open for questions and answers. There is a short presentation published on our website this morning. The full version will be published later today. Looking at the Dutch economy in last year, Dutch GDP growth remained above Eurozone average, despite the negative impact of lower production of natural gas, which is, of course, bringing the total GDP growth a bit lower. We saw an ongoing revival of the housing market, lower unemployment, and also positive consumer confidence, and that all contributed to a positive development of the Dutch economy. If you look at slide 4, you can see the full year highlights of ABN AMRO. The underlying result was a net profit of 1.9 billion, 24% higher than last year, especially on the back of lower impairments, despite higher operating expenses, which were heavily influenced by higher levies. And if you look at slide 5, there's a short update on the progress on our targets. We made good progress with the fully loaded Core Tier 1 ratio. It was at 15.5, well above the target range of 11.5 to 13.5. As you know, and as has been mentioned before, we continue to strengthen our capital position as long as the uncertainty around regulatory developments prevails. And once the impact of the risk rate harmonization is more clear, we will reassess our capital position. And if we would conclude at that time that we have excess capital, we will return that to shareholders. We intend to pay a 40% cash dividend over the full year. That was also already announced, and that will lead to a dividend payment of 764 million, or 81 cents per share. And as you know, we intend to increase our payout ratio to 45% this year and 50% over 2017. On slide 6, you can see that our return on equity for the full year was 12%, which is nicely within our target range, 10 to 13%. And on slide 7, you can see that the cost-income ratio for the full year was 61.8%. We aim to get below 60 by 2017. Last year, investments in TOPS 2020 and retail digitalization were high, and they are expected to peak this year. And if you look at the regulatory levies, they increased quite substantially last year to about 220 million, and this year we expect them to go to 300 million. So there's still some elevating elements in play. The same we expect for pension premiums. They went up this year, and we expect them to go up further next year, but they are close to the cap. Therefore, we expect the cost-income ratio to be above 60% also this year. But in 2017, we will be below the 60% because cost savings are increasing, pension premiums are at their maximum, and the same goes for regulatory levies. Kees, you can...
Thank you very much, Gerrit. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. If we turn to slide 8, the results. The full-year result, as already mentioned, improved by 24% to 1.9 billion. Q4 result was 272 million, which was 128 lower than Q4 2014. Most important reasons for that higher were the higher regulatory levies, 99 million net, a provision for a Euribor mortgage legal claim, and an extra provision for SME derivatives related to an AFM, Financial Markets Authority, announcement on the 4th of December, stating that a substantial part of the reassessments by the banks had to be redone. And as the current situation poses uncertainty about scope and magnitude of the required reassessment going forward, we continue to consult with the AFM to determine how the latest changes will affect ABN AMRO's review process in 2016. Then slide 9 on interest income. You can see that our NII in the last four quarters was more or less stable around 1.5 billion. It benefited this year from continued higher asset margins, both for mortgages and corporate loans, and that was offset by declining loan volumes for mortgages and consumer lending. The NIM in the fourth quarter was 147 and for the full year 146. One question which has been asked frequently lately is how we manage interest risk on the balance sheet. And, well, in essence, after netting the interest rate risk from asset and liabilities, we hedge most of the netted positions to floating rates. And this hedging can be either through macro hedges for portfolios or micro hedges for specific assets and liabilities. And the resulting interest rate position is managed depending on our strategy and within, of course, our risk appetite. If you go to slide 10, fees and other income, other operating income, you can see that fee income in 2015 was 8% higher for the last year and increased throughout the year. An increase was primarily in private banking due to stock market performance and in corporate banking on higher volumes at clearing. Other operating income is more volatile due to CVA, DVA and FVA results. And this quarter it also includes a provision for derivatives sold to SMEs. Slide 11 on expenses. You can see that expenses were up 8% compared to last year due to higher regulatory levies, 1 to 9, that's the gross amount in expenses, higher project costs, several projects, and higher pension costs, as already mentioned by Gerrit. Slide 12 shows you the loan impairments, and as you can see, cost of risk declined in 2015 substantially to 19 bips, around half a billion, which was also helped by 221 million IPNI release in 2015. The improvement is a result of an improving economy and also an improving housing market. Then, with respect to the segment results, slide 13, you can see that for the full year, underlying profit for retail bank further improved to 1.2 billion, mainly due to lower impairments for mortgages and consumer loans. The margins on residential mortgage improved due to continued gradual repricing, though this effect is gradually leveling off. Private banking's underlying profit for the full year improved by 34% to 2.2 billion in 2015, mainly due to higher operating performance and lower impairments. The corporate bank doubled its profit from 0.3 billion to 0.6 billion. Then if we go to our capital ambitions, slide 14, you can see that our fully loaded leverage ratio improved to 3.8 from 3.5 Q3 to Q4 due to retained earnings and a lower exposure measure at year-end. Implications for leverage, MREL and TLAC are manageable. Basel IV implications remain uncertain. slide 15. It's also on capital. You can see that our fully loaded quarter one is 15.5 year-end, well above the 1025-2016 regulatory requirement, which includes a 0.75 phase-in systemic risk buffer. This systemic risk buffer grows to 3% in 2019, as you know. Our current capital position provides a strong buffer before MDA restrictions apply. Wietse will now elaborate on impairment and risk developments.
Thank you, Kees. Let's move to slide 16, risk ratios. The cost of risk for the fiscal year, but also the last the full year and the last quarter, was 19 basis points. The impaired ratio for the customer loan book remained stable Q on Q at 2.7 and improved year on year. The increase of 39 million in impairment charges in corporate loans was largely concentrated in the retail sector in international clients. In absolute terms, the level of impaired loans for the client loan portfolio declined by 148 million compared to Q3. The inflow in our financial restructuring and recovery department continues to decline, and new inflow is usually in a better shape and easier to restructure than clients who have been in restructuring for a long time. Bear in mind here, of course, there are still sectors with more structural issues, for example, agri and retail. Moving to slide 17, mortgages. Momentum in the Dutch housing market is positive. On the back of the improving economy, the relatively low house prices and the low interest rate. The number of housing transactions went up 2.2% from the high level in Q4 to 14. Mortgage production volume was equal compared to the same period last year, but 30% lower than last quarter as a result of fierce competition from pension funds and other new entrants on the longer interest rate periods. Our market share in the fourth quarter was 16%. This is lower than the rest of the year. Redemptions increased further compared to the last quarter to €4 billion. We've seen an increase of refinancing existing mortgage loans due to the low long-term mortgage interest rates. The loan-to-market value improved to 80%, or excluding NHG, to 76%. Past due and impaired mortgage exposures continued to trend down. The annualized cost of risk for mortgages came to 2 basis points this quarter. The mortgage loans with a loan-to-market value more than 100% declined this year by 11.3 billion in 2015, of which 5.7 billion in the last quarter. Something on ECT. I move to slide 18. The ECT client on balance portfolio was 25.1 billion at year end 2015, which is about 9% of our total loan and receivables portfolio. If we include the off balance sheet items such as drawn letter of credits and guarantees, the portfolio was 31.4 billion. Impairments were relatively low this quarter at 31 million versus 37 million Q4 to 14. Some of the industries covered by ECT clients, particularly oil and gas, are nowadays top of mind. A lot has been written and discussed about oil price developments and the possible implications the significant price drop could have on financing activities to this sector. For this reason, I would like to make some additional comments on the exposures we have in our ECT portfolio. These comments are in addition to the usual disclosures you are familiar with from our investor presentations. I move on to slide 19. ECT clients is exposed to oil and gas markets either through energy clients or commodity clients active in energy markets. This page, this slide actually is a combined exposure of around 30 billion. Of which 7.7 is the energy commodities part and 5.3 is the energy clients part. Our energy commodities activities concern mainly short-term and self-liquidating trade financing exposure, generally for larger trading companies. The sensitivity to low oil and gas prices is generally limited. In general, these clients even benefit from price volatility. The exposure to energy clients, as said, it is around 5.3 billion. The sensitivity to low oil gas prices varies here across the value chain that ranges from upstream to downstream. Our oil and gas price sensitivity analysis covering the full energy clients portfolio shows that especially clients active in offshore drilling and services, i.e. that's the early part of the cycle, are more vulnerable in a prolonged period of low oil prices. Our reserve-based lending or upstream portfolio, however, demonstrated much more resilience for reasons like specific structures of the reserve-based lending and the ability of producers to reduce their cost base. The combined exposure of those two energy portfolios amounts to approximately 1.1% of our loan or receivables and is in total around 3.2 billion. And given the current market circumstances, we expect impairments in the energy portfolio as a whole to rise. We believe this is manageable, especially in view of the size of the portfolio. Our oil and gas price sensitivity analysis for the full energy portfolio, which is the 5.3 billion, indicates that for a different prolonged low oil prices scenarios, the impairment increases will be around 75 million for the mild scenario and around 125 million for the more severe scenario. A couple of remarks on the different portfolios. The reserve-based lending, which is the lowest part of slide 19, and to give you some more detail there, it's said there roughly 5% of ECT clients. It's more around 4%, so it is about 1.2 billion. It's a portfolio of approximately 0.4% of our total loan receivables with 42 clients. Approximately three quarters is in the U.S., which is mainly in gas, and one quarter is in the North Sea. In U.S. reserve-based lending, we are typically exposed to senior secured credit facilities. These clients have so far been able to weather the storm, and currently less than a handful of clients are managed in our F&R department. Please note that it does not automatically mean that these exposures are non-performing or impaired. Our stress tests show that if oil prices were to remain at low levels, we would expect some clients to transfer to FRNR, either for restructuring or intensive risk management and monitoring. The other part of the exposed to oil price buckets, which is the combination of other offshore companies and offshore drilling companies, it's a light green. There, to give you some more precise figure, it's more in the area of 6% of ECT clients, i.e. that's around 2 billion. This is a portfolio of approximately 0.7% of our total bank loan and receivables book. And this offshore drilling services book has approximately 27 client groups. It's a portfolio of modern drilling rigs and offshore services, such as seismic, subsea infrastructure construction, and oil field services. The cost-cutting and capex reductions by upstream clients is especially impacting businesses active in offshore drilling and services. So far, most clients have a good operational track record, which is crucial for the continuation of their existing contracts. Under the conservative assumption that no new contracts will be obtained, only a limited number of clients are at risk during 2016. So far on ECT, Gerrit, back to you.
Okay, thank you, Wietse. I'd like to conclude by saying that the underlying profitability of ABN AMRO remains good, though the Q4 results were impacted by higher regulatory levies and some provisioning. ROE, as I mentioned, was 12%, Core 1 ratio at 15.5%, and we improved the leverage ratio to 3.8%. And all segments had a higher profit for the year. Corporate banking even doubled underlying profit. We continue to actively monitor credit risk of our clients and focus on a balanced loan intake. We are well on track to meet our strategic ambitions and targets, and we are confident that the bank is able to take on the challenges that will inevitably come our way. Our capital position is strong, and we anticipate Basel IV. We will buy to our target to grow the dividend payout to 50% as from and over full year 2017. Thank you for participating in this call and your attention. And now we can open the call for questions. I give the word to the operator.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, we are starting the question and answer session now. If you have a question or remark, please press star 1 now on your telephone. Star 1 for questions or remarks. Please do not call hands-free. Please lift up the handset. Thank you very much. Our first question is from Mr. Cor Kluis from Rabobank. Go ahead, please, sir.
Good afternoon, Cor Kluis, Rabobank. A few questions. First of all, on mortgages. You mentioned in the press release that the repricing effect is leveling off. I think earlier you mentioned that in 2016 there would still be a positive effect from repricing of mortgages. Could you explain what you do expect for 2016 still for mortgage repricing? The second question is about SME derivatives. You indicated some figures that you provisioned for that. Could you indicate how you determined that and what kind of additional or maximum or what kind of losses could come from that file? Third question is about other expenses. If you lift out the levies in the fourth quarter, I think what we've seen that in retail and private banking, the expense level was around 50, 60 million higher in a quarter. I think 30, 40 million in retail and 15 to 20 million in private banking. due to project, and you mentioned some items. To what extent is that recurring for 2016? That were my questions.
Okay, let me start with the mortgages and the repricing. As Kees said, it's leveling off, but we still see some possibilities for further improvement in 2016 because of the redemption of, or contractual renewal, I should say, of mortgages originated in 2006, which was a year with very low margins. The derivatives case?
Yeah, with respect to derivatives, that is, we have not disclosed the figure here. And as I already said, well, it is not an insignificant amount which we have taken now in Q4, in addition to a provision we took in Q2. We are still in discussions with the Financial Markets Authority at this moment in time. So it is very difficult to explain what the exact calculation around this provision is. But as said, we expect further clarity during the year. But we cannot at the moment guide you more than this, what I mentioned, saying it's not an insignificant amount we've taken here. With respect to the other expenses, there are indeed a lot of special projects in both in retail bank and private banking related to compliance issues where we are looking in all the files now to further update them and make them completely compliance fit. And that is an operation which is a project which costs money. In the end, we, by the way, expect that also to continue this year. So it's not that those expenses are not there this year either, but of course, during the year, we hope that they would, of course, diminish. As we've mentioned before, guidance on cost-income ratio for this year is that we still expect to stay above the target range we have for 2017, also due, by the way, to the increase of the levies mentioned by Gerrit. And in 2017, as mentioned before, we have those TOPS 2020 program initiative and also in the retail bank with digitalization, two large projects. The investments last year and this year are higher than the savings, but from 2017 onwards, that will be the opposite, and that is the reason why from 2017 onwards we expect to get into the range of 56-60%.
Okay, wonderful. Very clear. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, please note, please limit the number of questions to three. Our next question is from Mr. Robin van den Broek from Mediobanca. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Also on other expenses, I would like to ask how your pension premiums move, because I thought you moved fully to defined contribution accounting, which should mean that your cash is equal to what you book in your P&L, but maybe I'm mistaken there. And I was also wondering if you could give a clearer number on where the regulatory levies will move. You booked to 20 in 15. The DGS charge will probably happen twice in 16, so I guess we're going to see you move more closer to 300. Maybe you can confirm that. And apart from the question that also Cor touched upon, can you maybe touch upon other drivers that will impact your operational expenses? Because you recently negotiated, I think, zero wage increase for 2016, so that's not going to be there. But are there any other drivers driving your cost expenses? And the second question is, on ECT.
You cannot count.
Sorry?
I think you make an accounting error. I already noted three questions.
I thought this was all in the bucket of the OPEX, but maybe on ECT, you give guidance for your energy-related impairments. Can you maybe give also some color on transport and commodities, or do you see no risk at all in those parts of ECT? So that's a very short one.
Right. Maybe on one word from me on pensions. We don't have pension assets on the balance sheet anymore, so it's indeed a defined contribution. Nevertheless, the pension premium is yearly calculated based on the cost price of 1 year tranche. So the interest rate still has an influence on the pension premiums we pay. So we expect pension premiums to go further up this year, but they are now very close to the maximum limit we agreed with the trade unions. And as far as the levies are concerned, you rightly said that this year it is 220, and next year it will be at 300, and that should be it.
Yes, and perhaps I can add to that last one, that the 300 is roughly 3 times 100, and the timing moments of those amounts will be the banking tax stays as it was in the past in October, so that's the Dutch banking tax, around 100 million in October, also this year. Then there is roughly 100 million we expect for this year on the European, ultimately the European Resolution Fund. That is expected now to be paid in the second quarter of this year. So not like last year, the last quarter, but the second quarter of this year. And then the final one, the post-guarantee, European, the post-guarantee, that will be split in 4 quarters. So every quarter we expect around 25 gross. The banking tax is not tax exempt, the other two are. With respect to
banking tax is not taxable. No.
Yeah, sorry. Excuse me, wrong word. Yeah. Then with respect to the operational expenses, I think you mentioned the zero wage agreement we have for this year. That's correct. We're happy with that, of course. But for the rest, as I mentioned, we will still have a lot of projects in the bank and still investments also. Who will, as I mentioned before, start really to pay off in 2017.
So the moving elements are still basically your pension costs, your regulatory levies. Those are your main drivers basically for OPEX in 2016.
Yeah, and investments in will peak in digitalization and.
Yeah, but your aggregated savings are also going up. So
correct. So those figures have been mentioned, I think, during IPO. So you know that those figures are still the same.
Yeah. Okay.
ACT?
Yeah, sure. I'll add some color to the question there. As to the guidance, indeed, we gave is on the energy book. Again, that is a kind of guidance for a prolonged period of low prices for 18 months, 1-8. As to commodities, not a specific guidance to give. As to the transportation portfolio, part of that, 1/5, is dry bulk. It's around 2 billion. We do expect somewhat higher impairments there. Could probably be offset by a much more better performing portfolio there, the tankers portfolio in the transportation portfolio. So it's kind of a mix, but again, we do expect some higher impairments on the dry bulk portfolio.
And maybe your oil of your energy related impairment in 15 was?
We have not disclosed that. What I can give to you, actually, if you look to the Q impairment number of ECT, which was actually a relative low number, also compared to year on year, almost half of that was energy related.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following question is from David Locke from Deutsche Bank. Go ahead, please.
Hi, everyone. Three for me. First one on margins. Appreciate the commentary around 2016 margin outlook and how you think it could be a little bit better for mortgages. Interested to hear what you think kind of beyond that, because certainly the way I calculated, if I look at where margins were in 2007, there was an increase in margins in 2007, so it strikes me that we may get pressure coming through in 2017 as the 20th of 2006 cohort moves through. So I wondered if you had any thoughts on that. The second question is around deposit costs. In the Netherlands, it looks like there's been continued reduction in deposit costs around kind of 12 bips in the last quarter on average across the Netherlands. I was wondering what potential you see for that going and continuing through the course of this year and what you have baked into your kind of margin guidance and plans for this year. And then the third question on the ECT is I'm just wondering what dates or what quarters do you typically review the kind of value of oil reserves for your clients? Thank you.
Okay, maybe first on mortgage margins. As I said before, it is leveling off, but still a bit increasing this year. The best guess for 2017, which is still, of course, a bit far away, is that it will not increase, probably stabilize. As far as deposit costs are concerned, the rate on deposits, we have seen a gradual decrease in the quarters behind us. I'm not allowed to make any statement on what I expect for the rest of the year, because that, according to the competition authorities, may inspire competition to act in a certain way. In January, we went to 0.6% on direct available deposits. So that is the situation right at this moment. Maybe on ECT, Wietse?
Sure. I guess the question was on how often do we redetermine the borrowing base and enterprise deck. Actually, the normal course is twice a year, around spring, around autumn. Those are the periods in which we redetermine the borrowing base. It's, I think, good to mention also for you to understand that in this lending, actually, we're always the senior part of the lending structure. And the advance rate we typically have is around 60-65 at the max, which also means that this portfolio, which is the reserve-based portfolio, we're talking about 1.2 billion, has been quite resilient actually also over the past, and given the stress test we are conducting and we have conducted, we think the exposures and impairments are manageable.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay.
The next question is from Mr. Anton Krajacuk from UBS. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, and thanks a lot for taking my questions. Three questions from me, please. Firstly, on capital, you are 200 basis points above the top end of your capital target. I understand that there is some uncertainty around Basel IV, but I was wondering what might prompt you to rethink your dividend policy, maybe speed up the increase in the payout ratios. So that's the first one. The second one, please, in the corporate international business unit, the loan book seems to have flattened out in the last quarter. I was wondering, what is the outlook going further? Do you think we might even see shrinking lending volumes in corporate international, probably driven by ECT? And then the final question on the leverage ratio relaxation. Now, you mentioned this on the slide, but can you give us an update, please, on when you would expect to get final clarity on this and how significant the benefit will be? Thank you so much.
Okay. Let me take the first question, that's on our capital position. We will wait until there's clarity from Basel first, and then there must be clarity from the European Commission side, and then there also must be clarity whether the Dutch Central Bank sticks to its add-on on the SREP demand from the ECB. As you know, our SREP demand is now 9.5, and they have imposed a 3% in the medium term extra on this. There will be, in our view, there should be a relationship with this add-on on the one hand and what Basel is doing on the other hand, if Basel is already forcing us to have a far higher risk weight, you can question whether this high add-on from the Dutch Central Bank should be in place.
So we'll have to wait. As soon as there's clarity, we will make up our mind on the capital position, and also we may redefine our dividend policy. Up till now, we promised a gradual increase from 40% over 2015 to 50% over 2017. We are quite comfortable that we can keep that promise, and we don't want to promise at this stage more than that. Corporate loan book, Witzer?
Sure. The question was as to the international part, I guess. Huh? So that's the ECT book primarily on slide 18. Indeed, you can see that the last year it was somewhat stable, both in euro and in dollar terms. And the period, the years before that, we grew that book quite rapidly to a size which we think is now fitting the strategy of the bank and fitting also the modest risk profile of the bank. Going forward, we expect this book to grow well in general in line with world trade. If you see to the mix in this book, we see somewhat lower on the commodity volume side, somewhat what's more on transportation and energy. But having said that, we expect the book to grow in line with the world trade.
Cash leverage ratio.
Yeah, with respect to the leverage ratio, indeed, as you know, we have sent a letter to Basel Committee. They will hopefully, and they said that they will come up with a new consultation in this area. It is related to 40-50 billion, depending on the moment, of guarantees we give to CCPs for our clients, on behalf of our clients. And we hope that they come up in the second quarter with a new consultation paper. And if that would give the relief, at least the direction we hope for, then that and that will of course take time. Then that will can give a relief of 20-30 bips with respect to the leverage ratio going forward. So that is no guarantees, of course, but we are hopeful with the first reaction they gave in a reaction to our letter.
Thank you. That's very clear.
The next question is from Mr. Andrew Coombs from Citibank. Go ahead, please.
Yep. Good morning. First question, which is beyond the 8% Q&Q decline in the leverage exposure. You state that's largely due to seasonal factors, positions being unwound into the year end. Could you give us an idea of how much you would expect that to rebound, therefore, in Q1? Second question would be, could you please quantify the Euribor mortgage legal claims, or failing that, if you can't, could you at least tell us whether the NIM excluding those claims would have been flat, down, or up Q on Q? And then the third question would be with regards to the stress assumptions that you've applied both in your mild and severe scenario that you mentioned. What is backing those assumptions? Thank you.
Yep. Thank you very much for your questions. With respect to the seasonal effect, it's very much related to securities finance business we have on balance sheet. The effect can be, I would say, around 10 to 20 bips on a quarterly basis. With respect, so it might decline, the leverage ratio in the first quarter, as we've seen, for instance, also in the first quarter of last year. That might happen. That might happen this quarter due to this effect. Then with respect to your second question, some guidance on the Euribor. Indeed, we did not disclose, but I can give you some guidance here, which also gives you perhaps some guidance for NIM. what we have mentioned in the quarterly report on page 18, and that is related to the retail banking, we mentioned there that net interest income Q4 declines by 80 million. In the retail bank. And then we say this was largely driven by provisions taken related to legal claims, including Euribor, in Q4 2015, and a positive one-off item in Q4 2014. The positive item in Q4 2014 is mentioned on page 11 for the group, and there we mention a 37 million positive one-off. The 37 is more than half of that amount is in the retail bank. The other part is in the private bank. So if you take that into account and you see that it's largely driven by those provisions, you have, I would say, an indication of those legal claims, including Euribor. And with respect to NIM, that would guide you. The NIM in Q3 was 149, in Q4 147. That compared to the 149, it would presumably be a bit up if you take out those two elements.
Very clear. And on the ECT book?
Sure. The couple of assumptions under that stress test. The first scenario, well, call it the mild one. The assumption is the oil price remains at an average of $30 a barrel for at least 18 months. That's a first assumption. Second assumption is that in the whole energy portfolio, because bear in mind we stress the whole portfolio, 5.3 billion, all sectors, we are applying in a portfolio-wide UCR downgrade, so credit rating downgrade, of quite severe couple of notches. And we take as an assumption that we let default all our current clients who are being within the R&R department. Well, that leads then to the 75 million, our best estimation, of course. The second scenario, which is the more severe one, oil price drops to an average of 20 US dollar for at least 6 months, and then 30 for the remaining period. The same way of dealing with the notching down of the credit ratings, but in the severe scenario, we even go one step further, and all the clients on watch are also being assumed to default. Again, this is a theoretical scenario, bear in mind that, but this is quite a severe assumption we took in this scenario. Well, that severe scenario then leads to the 125.
Okay, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Our next question is from Mr. Farquhar Murray, and he is autonomous. Go ahead, please.
Morning. Hi, gentlemen. Actually, just two questions. Firstly, just a follow-on on the kind of loss scenario, the 75 to 125 million there. Can you just explain? I mean, that seems a remarkably resilient outcome. I just wonder if you could explain which characteristics within the lending portfolio really drive that ability to kick out that kind of loss outcome. And then secondly, just on the SME derivatives and the charge you've taken in the fourth quarter, should we take that as being your kind of best estimate of the review exercise you're going to make in 2016, or should we expect further charges as you work through that exercise next year? I appreciate there's no guarantees. I'm just trying to understand, have you made a best estimate of what's going to come? Thanks.
Let me start with your last question. This is our best estimate, but no guarantee that this will be the outcome. On the stress testing?
Yeah, what your question, what is driving actually that, if I understood your words quite well, somewhat, let's say, a positive outcome. I don't know if these are the words you used, but at least let me give some color here. Bear in mind that, I mean, part of this 5.3, which is exposed primarily to the lower oil prices, which we indicated on the slide, 19, is the combination of reserve-based and onshore drilling and offshore. If you look to the reserve-based lending portfolio we have quite a resilient portfolio there. In the stress test, we are stress testing on PDs, probability of default, notching down credit ratings. But also, of course, important then is what is the LGD, loss given default? Well, it happens to be, as I explained, I think, in an earlier answer to a question, that the security position we have in that reserved-based lending is quite good. It's either the situation we are not at all part of the loss-absorbing lenders, mezzanine, let alone equity, And the other issue, of course, is the redetermination semi-annually of the borrowing base, as well as the, on average, low advance rates. Also, of course, the choice of clients we have been selectively onboarding over the last couple of years has been important there. Last comment here, I think the majority of the portfolio U.S. is geared to gas and not to oil. Last comment on then the offshore drilling part of the portfolio. Very important there is, of course, also again collateral. And we do have a portfolio of quite modern rigs, also financed at relatively conservative advance rates, remaining live around 20-25 years, where probably 40-50% of the global drilling fleet, which is not only in our portfolio, is probably 25-plus years old. So also there, from an LGD perspective, there is some advantage. Nevertheless, we should be there also, of course, cautious about what happens in the market.
Okay, thanks very much.
The next question is from Mr. Benoit Petrarque from Kepler Cheuvreux. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon, Benoit Petrarque from Kepler Cheuvreux. Just to start with a small remark, if you could put for us a slide with all the details, detailed information you have been giving us on this call on the oil, I think you can give a lot, and we have been getting a lot of information today, but could you just maybe summarize that in a couple of slides? That would be very useful. The first question will be on cost of risk. I mean, there are many moving parts, but if I listen correctly, basically what you expect on the energy exposure, I mean, 75-125, probably not moving up much year on year in 16 versus 15. And then on the other side, you still see a very nice trend on the Dutch macro, also mortgages, loan losses on mortgages much lower, also on the corporate side. What is your kind of outlook for 2016? Where do you see cost of risk going in 2016? I mean, if I listen correctly, I have the impression that it will trend down in 16 despite the energy issue there. And then second question on that, you've mentioned some problematic files on the retail side in the Netherlands, so large corporate retail. How many files have you seen problematic there, and is that relating to VND, your ex-client, probably not a client anymore, but is that relating to this file specifically? And then the last question will be on the loan growth. I think, loan growth on mortgages was slightly down quarter on quarter. What do you expect for 2016? Are we going to see still this downward trend? And on the commercial client, I was a bit surprised to see a Q-on-Q decrease on the clean basis, without this transfer of public loans. Do you actually see a pickup in loan growth and loan demand in the Netherlands? Is that something we can expect for 16? Thank you.
Right. Let me at least address the first two questions, and perhaps the preliminary question about your request for a nice summary. We thought that we had a nice summary in the current slide deck, being 1.8 and 1.9, and probably in the more extensive presentation, you will see the same there coming back. Your question actually as to guidance going forward for cost of risk for the bank as a whole, that I think is your question as to the coming year. If we look back, part of the much larger or more than half impairments is also caused by quite a substantial IPNI release of 221 million. We don't expect an IPNI release in that size to be back again. And in terms of guidance, we have given guidance of the cost of risk through the cycle of 25-30 basis points, which is still valid, of course. If I answer your question on the Q4, and I thought your question was from as to large client files, if indeed you look to the number of Q4, and actually the whole trend of asset quality of all the business lines has been trending down, especially also for all the cost of risk numbers, with the exception of international clients in Q4, which was in impairment number 109 million. In that number, international clients, to be more specifically, it was 103 million. ECT was 31 million. There has been an addition to the IPNI of 20 million, which is dealing with the ECT file. So the remaining part, which is around 50, dealt with a couple of larger files, mostly in the retail sector. Well, as you know, and I'm telling that I think each time in the call, that in the large corporate world, you may from time to time, and it's somewhat of a lumpy trend, from time to time you may suffer somewhat of a larger hit, which is quite usual in this sector. If you look to the economy improvements in the Netherlands, of course you may expect that also the corporate active in the Netherlands do benefit from that.
Well, looking at our commercial clients' loans, what we see at commercial clients is that fewer go to F&R, and a lot of them are returning from F&R to the regular business, so the situation of small and medium-sized companies is really improving. What we do not see yet is an extension of the loan book. Redemptions are even bigger than new loans for commercial clients, probably because they want to improve their balance sheet position, because in the past they used to work with rather little equity, and that's also a reason why such a large part of the commercial clients went into F&R. So probably before they start to ask for extra loans on their balance sheet, they first want to improve their equity position. That is the best explanation I can give. On average, the situation of these clients is improving, but not at this stage in such a way that they that our loan portfolio is growing. For the rest of the year, we don't know. Maybe it will pick up during the year, but up till now, we don't see loan growth there.
Thank you very much.
The next question is from Mr. Bruce Hamilton from Morgan Stanley. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. Yep. Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for the presentation. Three fairly quick questions. Firstly, on the deposit costs, so you come down to around 60 bips. Where do you feel the lower bound is on where you know the Dutch market can go on that, or where clients will bear? Secondly, I mean, I guess just a question. I don't really understand why you couldn't actually split out the explicit costs of the two provisions. I know you've helped us to try and understand, but is there any reason why you can't just give us the numbers? And linked to that, I mean, if I look at the provision related to SME derivatives, in the capital market solutions other income line, there's about a 50 million delta Q on Q. I mean, would that roughly, can you tell me that roughly approximates to the impact in Q4? And then finally, just on the leverage ratio, which has improved nicely, what do you still have in terms of kind of self-help that you can do? I know you've talked about reducing further sort of derivative balance sheet positions, which, you know, came down in Q3. How much more is there to go for there? Thank you.
Okay, let me start by not answering your first question. Of course, I can theorize a bit about where it could end. We have long thought that interest rates could not be negative, but the ECB has beaten that expectation. So I cannot give an answer where the end of interest rates and savings deposits may be. Second issue is, why don't we make these provisions explicit? That is because they're both still under either court or may come under court. And we have a position that if there's still a legal debate about whether it's justified or not, that we don't disclose it, because then you give firearms to the enemy, so to say.
Got it.
Leverage ratio, I think the most important one, as I mentioned, was of course the clearing. That is of course the most serious one we can do. Secondly, and that's off balance sheet at the moment, for the leverage ratio, we have to gross up our net cash pooling product. And that is something we are looking into as well. How we can solve that one going forward, that will take, we think, at least the rest of the year, but it's something which is of course is going to be helpful, we think. And then, although not for the short future, I mean, we have mentioned before that to optimize our capital stack going forward, for a moment in time, we will look into an 81 again, and that of course also helps the leverage ratio. Furthermore, we will look into a balance sheet, also on balance sheet, of course, to optimize further where possible.
Thank you. And just going back to the second question. I mean, thanks for the answer on why you haven't disclosed explicitly. But is there anything else going on in the other non-interest income line in Capital Market Solutions other than that provision impact, which would otherwise imply about 50 million?
No, the one you mentioned is, of course, by far the most important.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Mr. J.P. Lambert from KBW. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. The first question is regarding the mark-to-market of house prices. As the house prices are going up, I'm wondering how quickly you adjust the house price using, to calculate the loan-to-value. Is it index-based? Is it automatic? And is there a lag? That's the first question. Second question is regarding the exposure to commodity traders. Can we assume that the 19 billion commodities client exposure is exposure to commodity traders? And then related to this, what is the size of the single exposure within that group? Thank you.
If we calculate the loan-to-value, we do index indeed according to price indices with a rather short time lag. Maybe you can go into the commodity trading, Witse?
Yeah, I was not fully aware of the question, actually. You referred us to the commodity trading part. What was actually the question?
Yeah, the question is, can we assume that the 19 billion exposure, which you indicate under the commodities category, is equal to your exposure to commodity traders? And within that 19 billion, if you could quantify the largest single exposure?
I cannot reconcile a 90, 19. I cannot reconcile that actually, but probably we will look into that. And we have not disclosed the split of commodities and transportation and shipping. We have done that, I think, in the IPO disclosures at the time. So probably that gives you a sense of where we are in the commodities trading book of whole ECT, which was originally somewhat above 50% and which is now approx 45-46%. Your question as to the largest single obligor, we're not disclosing that. But of course, in our portfolio, we have a number of top 10 one obligors who do still fit in what we call our moderate risk profile in terms of largest sector and largest single client exposures.
But I think we can confirm that commodity are commodity traders.
Oh, that of course. But I thought the question was as to the part of the portfolio. But of course, those are traders, and we are never, as a bank, trading on ourselves in commodities, etc. We only finance commodity traders. Yeah, correct.
Very good. Thank you.
Welcome.
The next question is from Ms. Anke Reinig from RBC. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. I just had two follow-up questions, please. Firstly, on the dividend, where you talk about the growing dividend payout ratio from 40 to 45%. I just wondered what your view is on absolute growth and dividends, because obviously the headwinds you might face in 2016 might not lead to an absolute increase in the absolute dividend, or I just basically thinking at the time we have financial year 2016, there might be more clarity on a number of fronts, so it's irrelevant. And then secondly, on the mortgage margins, you told us before, or you were indicating that you are pricing longer mortgages to reflecting regulatory uncertainty. And I was wondering, is this actually successful at the moment, or is it that the insurers are too aggressive on the pricing on the longer-term mortgages that that you don't really see the benefit? Thank you.
Your first question on absolute dividend is more or less a question for a profit forecast, and we don't give a profit forecast. Looking at the mortgages, the pension funds and insurers are the strongest in the longest segment, so the 20-year segment. We do also we are also active in that segment, but our market share there is lower than in the 10-year segment. So our priority is to have a strong position in the 5 to 10-year segment and to cautiously also be active in the longer term. Of course, they have a very strong position in this long-term mortgages. Nevertheless, for the year as a whole, we were able to have a 20% market share. We are still the biggest mortgage provider in the Netherlands, and we aim to at least stabilize our portfolio also for the years to come.
I actually wasn't trying to get a profit indication for the year. I was just wondering, so your dividend policy obviously remains a payout ratio rather than talking anything in terms of absolute levels.
Yeah, up till now, our policy is formulated in terms of payout ratio. Maybe at some later stage we will rethink that, but this is, for the time being, the way we formulate our dividend policy.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Ms. Alicia Chung from Exane. Go ahead, please.
Sorry, hi. Just a couple of quick questions from me. Firstly, on the net interest margin, you talked about the fact that there was an increase in cash levels and liquidity buffer. Just wondering what the impact of that was on the group net interest margin, and also do you expect to continue to increase your cash levels and the liquidity buffer from here? And secondly, just on the private banking division, can you give any colour in terms of near-term outlook around AUM flows and also market performance? Thanks.
With respect to NIM, I think we have indeed at the moment a very high cash level related to LCR, not so much requirements, but the goals we have formulated for ourselves to stay above the 100. We are looking into that. It's also related, by the way, to the net cash pooling I mentioned before. Hopefully we are able to lower those cash levels going forward at some moment in time, but at the moment that is still not possible, but we are trying to optimize that further because we do agree that it's, of course, a costly affair, and especially when ECB would go further with lowering rates. So we look into that carefully at the moment. With respect to the private bank, it's very difficult after the last 6 weeks to do a forecast here on AUM. So I'm hesitant to say anything on that. Our performance in private bank as guidance in general is that we perform in line with market performance. But the market is these days, of course, a bit, volatile.
Okay, thank you very much.
The next question is from Ms. Kiri Vijayaraja from Barclays. Go ahead, please.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Kiri Vijayaraja from Barclays. Just a couple of questions on the Dutch mortgage market. Are you happy with your current level of market share on new origination? I guess at what point do you and some of the bank mortgage providers end up being a bit more responsive in terms of pricing? And collectively, if you look at the non-bank mortgage providers' market share, do you think we're at a kind of high watermark for them, or do you worry they're going to continue making inroads? into the Dutch mortgage market. I appreciate a lot of it's probably contingent on kind of Basel IV outcomes and where bank-regulated mortgage risk weights go, but just your views on how you're sort of viewing the market strategically would be useful. Thanks.
Well, as far as the mortgages, we don't formulate a market share. We want to stabilize our portfolio. I think at this moment, the total mortgage market, there is a bit of a cyclical revival. So probably the total market is growing. We think that keeping our total portfolio as it is a sensible thing to do. As far as pricing is concerned, of course, we sharply watch what's happening in the market. Up till now, our margin on the total portfolio did not suffer from the competitive battle which is going on. It's not easy to predict what the non-banks will do with their mortgage portfolio. For us, originating mortgages is a daily business, so to say. But for pension funds and insurance companies, it's an allocation, it's a balance sheet allocation issue. So what we have seen is that sometimes an insurance company may come in with a big market share in the year, and next year is completely gone. And that's because we have a system of intermediaries, which are dealing with the mortgage demand and chooses where to put the mortgage. So it's rather easy to penetrate in the market if you have the money and the capital behind you. But as I said, it is a bit of an allocation. At this moment in time, they think they have too few mortgages on their balance sheet, but it may come a moment that they will say enough, and then the competition situation may drastically change again. Until now, we are confident that we can be competitive in this market, as we have shown also in the past year, and the targeting for a more or less stable mortgage portfolio is still realistic at decent margins.
Okay. Oh, thank you. We have one more question, and that is from Mr. Daniel Dotoy from JP Morgan. Go ahead, please, sir.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking the question. I actually only just have one left. You've mentioned previously that you've managed to keep your net interest income broadly flat for the last four quarters or so, and I guess if you put together your sort of outlook for asset margins, deposit costs, lending volumes, and also your expectation, as you mentioned earlier, on likely lower ECB rates in the near future, is that a trend that you believe can also be maintained in this year, in 2016? Thank you.
Well, that means guidance on NII for this year, and then as said, we can give you the elements, but we can give you the total effect of that, because it's also partly unclear, by the way. But we have managed last year to do it, and I think, as you have seen, our most important portfolio is mortgages. Well, we still, as you've heard our chairman, are still positive about being able to keep volumes in place and at good pricing also this year. Deposits, there is some margin there. You've seen what we've done last year, but cannot really give you more guidance than that.
Okay, but you feel comfortable about the different mitigation tools available to you? Okay.
Yeah, we have them, yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chairman, there are no further questions.
Okay. Then I thank all the analysts and investors for joining us in this call, and hope to speak to you at the next quarter.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes this telephone conference. On behalf of ABN AMRO, thank you for attending. You can disconnect your line now. Yeah.